Dave Pagnotta from the fourth period joins us. Dave, how you doing?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm excellent. Well, Ross said it. It's exactly true. The last two games for Colorado, we can say Minnesota's a good defensive team, but no team in the NHL should only get 12 shots in a game.
Yeah, especially come playoff time. That was a little rough for the Avs. And you know what? Sometimes when things are going so well for you, a team that nobody expected to do remotely close to as well as they've been doing so far this year, you need a nice little kick in the pants and a nice little shot back down to reality to get back into your, you know, into what made you so successful in the first place. And I think, I hope for their sake, that last night's game really did that for the Colorado Avalanche and kind of reminded them that, oh yeah, we aren't superhuman, and we need to get back to playing our style of hockey and not get caught up in what Minnesota's trying to throw our way.
Well, you know, all season long, Colorado is a team that won by having good goaltending and playing a little bit risky and giving up shots and then taking advantage, right? I don't know,
yeah.
Especially that Tyson Barrie injury kills them because he was their best guy at moving the puck up the ice from the back end.
Yeah, he really was. And I think all the Avs were really hoping that the suspension could be announced after last night's game so they can do what they needed to do and take care of things themselves. I'm a little surprised they didn't react to it a little bit quicker when things kind of went down and the knee-on-knee actually occurred. But you're right. I mean, this is a team that allowed itself to take the risks because of how well Varlamov had been playing in front of them. And you don't need, even though you move your, or excuse me, you lose your best mobile defenseman, doesn't mean that all of a sudden you have to rework your system. The Avs still have the components and still have the guys that can still rush the puck up the ice. If they've got to throw a guy down there and use one of their top six guys to be able to create that type of a play, well, that's how you have to adjust, and that's what you need to do in order to continue playing that mindset of hockey that's gotten you through the season to this point. So I think for the Avs, it's not as devastating as an injury as it is. I don't think it's earth-shattering in a sense that they still have some really good tools. It's just a matter of kind of recollecting themselves a little bit and saying, okay, guys, let's calm down a little bit. These last two games haven't been the best. Let's work back, go back to the basics, and do what's been right for us.
Dave Pagnotta joins us. Dave, Ken Hitchcock wisely is playing smoke and mirrors with David Backes. What are you hearing? Any chance he plays tonight?
It doesn't look like it. I would be surprised if Backes is in the lineup tonight. Obviously, it would be great for the St. Louis Blues. They need him in there. But without him, obviously, you know, it's a different kind of St. Louis Blues team. I think they're in a bit of trouble right now with Chicago kind of waking up a little bit and having all, you know, their top four lines kind of rolling and contributing in one sense or another. For St. Louis, yeah, you need David Backes in there. But at the same time, you rush him back in there, you risk injuring him even further. And I don't know if that's a risk they should be willing to take.
Dave Pagnotta from the fourth period joins us. The West has been all homer series, excluding San Jose winning one game on the road. Meanwhile, in the East, it's been the opposite. What do you make of that? Anything?
Not really. I mean, it's just certain teams certainly play better at home, but you know, it's really a matter of playoff time is a whole different ballgame. You get inside somebody's head at a certain point in any particular game, and you can kind of take advantage of that. Yeah, the home crowd plays a bit of a factor, and it can help pump you up a little bit. But guys that are in other buildings that hear that for the home team, for their opposition, it pumps them up too because they want to shut them up. So as much as the home ice, we can say plays a factor, yeah, the line changes may come into effect towards the end of the game. But ultimately, you know, from an East Coast standpoint, it's just the West is a better overall conference right now. We're seeing some good matchups in the East, and because of that, anything kind of goes.
It is true. Marc-Andre Fleury and the Pittsburgh Penguins. The thing about Fleury, I don't think he's a bad goalie, Dave. The problem is when he has a brain cramp, it's a massive one. You know, for 59 and a half minutes, he stopped 38 of 40. He would have been the first star of the game. Then he makes one bad decision, ties the game up, and then he mentally just collapses in overtime and lets in one of the weakest goals I've seen in overtime in a long, long time. And this is not new. This is like 5 years in a row, subpar 900 save percentage in the playoffs. How much of this falls on Ray Shiro for not doing something about it?
As much as Fleury's been a concern for them, I mean, this is also a situation that, look, he helped get them to back-to-back Stanley Cup final. He helped them win a Stanley Cup, you know, a number of years ago. And they know what they've got in Marc-Andre Fleury. This isn't anything new. This has been going on. You mentioned 5 years. It's been going on his entire career. He's had to battle with head games and battling himself, to be perfectly honest. You look at Ray Sherrow and you say, yeah, maybe he could have made an adjustment. Maybe he could have brought in another veteran backup with Volkoon being hurt. Maybe he could have addressed the overall team D a little bit. But without giving up significant pieces, I don't know what else they could have done. They came inches away from acquiring Ryan Kesler, and that ended up falling through because Vancouver pulled out. It was about an hour to go before the trade deadline and told them it wasn't going to happen. That's why they ended up with Lee Stepniak, having to adjust their game plan a little bit. I think more so than anything, you can throw a bunch of blame on Marc-Andre Fleury. I was at the last two games between Pittsburgh and Columbus. The guys in front of him need to step up a little bit more. If everyone's pointing the finger at Flower, you got to start pointing the finger at number 87 and number 71 as well. I didn't notice Crosby until maybe halfway through the game the other night. And for the Pittsburgh Penguins, they need their top guns rolling. They had that 3-0 lead and were able and should have been able to close down that game pretty easily. They gave up. They stopped playing their game. And unfortunately, you know, they're sitting at a tied series right now.
Yeah, definitely their big guns have to get going. And when Neal and Kunitz scored, you thought, okay, now they're awake. But then they just completely sat back. And it's the strangest series.
Yeah.
I think the percentages are like 0.02 that you would have teams give up 3-1 leads in four consecutive games.
Well, if you're throwing down money, there's a good chance the next game tomorrow night will be 4-3 final. It's been that way the first bit. It's funny. Both teams have been basically playing the same kind of style. When they're going up and they're up 3-1 or whatever, you know, at any point in the game, they seem to let up. And that's what's allowed the opposition, the other team, on any given night, to come back into the series. And for Pittsburgh, I was shocked that their defensive game, their defensive lapses. Look, this is a team. Come the third period, the Penguins, there was a good stretch of about 7 minutes where the Jackets only managed one shot on net. And all of a sudden, things kind of broke down, and you get that odd bounce. The puck comes around the board, the corner of the boards, and starts bouncing around there a little bit in front of or behind Marc-Andre Fleury. He goes after it for whatever the reason, and you got a tie game, and now you're sitting here going, oh, you got to be kidding me. The same thing has kind of been happening, you know, for both sides. So it's not like one team has completely overmanaged the other team. It's just a situation now that we got question marks with our goaltender. We're not able to stop the opposition. And believe me, I saw the Jackets afterwards, after that game. The amount of confidence that is spewing from them right now is unbelievable. And yeah, they know. They don't think. They know now that they can take this series.
Dave Pagnotta from the fourth period joins us. Dave, when Tampa Bay loses, you know, no one's even contemplating John Cooper's status as their head coach. They were out without their number one goaltender, made it a difference. L.A.'s down 3-1 in that series, and they're not winning three straight against the San Jose Sharks. Is there any issue, do you think, with Daryl Sutter, or do you think the L.A. Kings have to make a significant change to how they play?
The coach will be seriously reevaluated once the season is done. This is the first full season that Daryl Sutter's had behind the bench in Los Angeles. Yeah, he came in halfway. They won the Stanley Cup. There was obviously the shortened season last year because of the lockout. This is the first year that he's had to work with this team through a full 82 games, and there have been a bunch of faults throughout the course of the season. I've had a chance to follow the team pretty closely, and I don't the mismatches with his line juggling alone throughout a game is. I don't understand how you can maintain chemistry when you've got one player playing with eight different guys in one particular game on his other wings. There are going to be some question marks surrounding Daryl Sutter's future with the Kings. I don't know if the hammer gets dropped this summer. I would be a little bit surprised. But if they're not dominating, like they've got the tools to do it. If they're not dominating come the off season, November, December after the off season, then Dean Lombardi's got a serious question he needs to answer. And hey, if it happens this summer, I for one would not be surprised.
Well, the other thing is, like, guys like Dustin Brown, do you think he's like? You look at how much he's getting paid, $7.5 million next year, Dave. Like that's. He's going to be one of the most overpaid players in the NHL based on production now.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're looking at it in numbers, without a doubt, in terms of his statistics and not putting up the points that Dustin Brown should be putting up. The problem with it is that he went from being on a first line with Justin Williams and Anze Kopitar and banging the body and throwing the body around and creating chances for those other two guys because of the way that he plays and his style of play, to playing on a third or fourth line with guys like, you know, all due respect to Jarrett Stoll and Dwight King and Jordan Nolan and these guys that he's had, they're not the same caliber player. And because of that, you have to play a different style and a different system. It's not working out for him. If you're bringing in a guy like Dustin Brown, paying him that type of contract because of how well he's performed in the past with you know, top-tier caliber players, to throw him down with, you know, your quote-unquote third or fourth line guys kind of diminishes his use. I'm not trying to defend him in a sense that, you know, I feel that he definitely needed to step up this year, and he's underperformed. He'll be the first to admit that. But he has been tremendously misused, and he's not the only one. Mike Richards has been a ghost for most of the season for the LA Kings.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the last couple of weeks of the season that Daryl Sutter tried to send him a wake-up call by putting him on the fourth line. Yeah, I don't know about that one.
Dallas and the Ducks. Getzlaff and Solani look to be back in. Solani sounds like it was just, you know, a rest more than anything by his head coach. You know, the Ducks did not look good without Ryan Getzlaff. I think they'll be much, much better tonight. They're at home ice. Who do you like in that best of three now?
Well, I still give the edge to the Anaheim Ducks based on everything they've done this season. They've got the tools. Getzlaff's going to be coming, you know, obviously coming back into this one with added motivation to kind of reclaim the lead in that series for his team. That obviously, you know, MVP caliber season for him. I think the Ducks are going to be able to kind of get back to their system and kind of control the pace of play with Getter back in the lineup. The biggest, you know, thing for me, to be perfectly honest, is not having Stefan Robida back there. The reason they brought him in was to shut down the opposition's top units, and coming from Dallas, a team that he's familiar with, to help that style of play and help shut down Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn. They don't have that piece on that back end right now that can do that, unless they're throwing Francois Beauchemin into the mix or somebody else. Lucas Pizzo will be in the lineup tonight, so I'm not sure what type of role he'll have. But at the end of the day, yeah, the Stars now have this extra motivation to kind of move forward and try to take it. But with Getzlaff back in the swing of things, I'm still liking the Ducks in this series.
Dave, appreciate your time. Have a great weekend.
Sounds good. You too, man.